up these,
I don't know. What do they sound like? Can you describe them?
Like a very high-pitched tone.
Oh, that could be any number of things. Ringing in the ear, tinnitus, lack of certain vitamins, or it could be something that you're actually experiencing. An amazing thing is that a very, very few people have been established as being sensitive to these electromagnetic influences. And a lot of people who at one time, their peers thought that they were actually hearing something, it turned out that they really were responding to an actual objective stimulus. But I would have no way of knowing that without running some tests, and I normally don't do that.
Yeah, well, Ed, when I first started hearing them, I thought I was picking up earthquake frequency, because what was happening was that usually a day or so before, when I would hear the signal, the next day I'd hear on the news that they were having an earthquake somewhere.
Well, far out. I worked on Project Migraine with Chris Bird in Washington, Library of Congress, and Charlotte King was the subject that we used here.
Uh-huh.
And she was able to predict earthquakes about a day or two in advance by the sounds that she heard in her head.
Yeah.
And that has been fairly well replicated and established, and that project has been ongoing for about 3 or 4 years now. Maybe you're another one of those extremely sensitive persons.
Where is Charlotte now?
I believe she's still up in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, because it always happens right after I hear the frequency. There's always an earthquake. Now, two things that have happened. Sometime when I would hear this high frequency in my left ear, normally I would hear about an earthquake in a foreign country. And usually in my right ear, it's usually here in California.
What you do this for is leave your telephone number with the operator, and I'll pass it along to Chris Bird, and there's some people who would be definitely interested in talking with you about this.
Okay.
Believe us, the family here takes this seriously.
Okay.
Now, these things, I'm very, very impressed with some of the things that you were mentioning. Clarissa Bernhardt is still an amazing forecaster. If Clarissa ever calls me and says, get out of town, I'm leaving.
You got it.
But these things do seem to happen, and if you've got that tendency going, I think it's worth checking into.
You should be one of the shamans or holy ladies.
Well, I don't know. That's what my... because I had this checkup with my doctor, not to keep you on the line because others are calling, but I remember once I was in the hospital on the fifth floor, and right after surgery, I was so sensitive to the sound of the machine, my doctor had to move me to two different rooms. And she said, I was picking up the sound of the laundry room, and she said the laundry room was in the basement, and I was on the fifth floor.
I believe you, because there's enough rotating magnetic equipment like motors and blowers in that laundry room to permeate an entire building. We're going to show you next weekend how you can detect these things and make them audible. They're normally hidden, but with electronic pickups, it makes them very, very obvious and easy to detect.
Yeah, the nurses thought I was crazy.
Well, I don't think you are.
I don't think you are. Maybe what we're going to do is put you on hold here as we go to a commercial cluster.
Okay.
And give the name and address there, and then we get back to you.
Okay, sure, thank you.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Thank you very much. I'm Bill Jenkins, with me, Dr. Bob Beck. Hear a woodpecker sound?
Okay, let's see what this sounds like if you tune across the shortwave band and find out where it's...
Now, what is that sound doing, Bob?
What we have here is a little pocket device which puts out a magnetic pulse, which has a range, the one that I have in my hand here, which is about half the size of a pack of cigarettes, has a range of about 3 feet. And these things come from West Germany, and they are built to reconstruct the good vibes. See, we're totally swamped with this electromagnetic interference. These things are programmable to set out frequencies that cause your left and right hemisphere to synchronize, etc. And the instructions for the people in West Germany who are sensitive to this, and by the way, we understand that politicians, people who have to remain conscious at the switch, airline pilots, etc., carry these. When they feel that slight dissociation or depression or loss of attention or mild loss of consciousness, like a petit mal or a grand mal seizure that could be caused by any number of things, including signals such as the woodpecker, they simply turn one of these things on, and within a few minutes, they're stabilized again. We'll demonstrate these at the seminar next weekend, give away perfectly free schematics so you can go to Radio Shack and build your own. And a lot of people need things like this.
What does the woodpecker do to me if I don't have one of these defense devices around me? Or some other function, perhaps, you can do it mentally as far as that goes if you understand how to do those things. But what does it do to me?
Again, there are two schools of thought here. Until quite recently, it was felt that the only radiation which had psychophysiological effects or physiological effects on plants, animals, and human beings would be either thermal radiation, something that heated you up like a diathermy machine, or ionizing radiation that would sort of disturb your genes and chromosomes, like X-rays, cosmic rays, atomic fallout, etc. So our health officials set very, very high levels for these signals in industry and around radio transmitters and electromagnetic sealing devices for making plywood, etc. And the Soviets have traditionally had a signal level that's much, much lower than that that's accepted as a standard in the United States. Now, if you're one of about the 30% of people who are sensitive to this type of an influence, in the case of Eugene, Oregon, it was bringing on mild epileptic-type seizures. There was one stretch of highway reported up there where people in broad daylight, perfect weather conditions, would sort of nod out, go to sleep at the wheel, drive off the highway and into a telephone pole. There were people falling into machinery during this critical period of the spring of 1978.
We had a little town that everybody went bonkers up there.
Yeah, Corvallis, the seat of the university. And at that time, this was absolute magic. It was heresy to feel that... Well, let's backtrack here a second. You're probably aware that back in the 60s, there were psychedelic nightclubs that used strobe lights as part of the lighting effect, psychedelic lighting. Unfortunately, if
these... drugs.
And drugs. If these strobe lights were flashing at particular rates, known as the epileptic flicker rate, the customers, those who had tendencies toward epilepsy or had it in the family, would have mild seizures, and there were a lot of lawsuits. So they had to tune these strobe lights to benign frequencies. Everyone knows about epileptic flicker rate photic stimulation. Everyone knows that there's such a thing as a heart pacer that puts out a very small electrical pulse that times the beating of your heart. This is essential for people who've lost that natural ability.
Even sound can do that.
Absolutely. But very few people, until I would say the last 5 or 6 years, have recognized that these electromagnetic pulses, these little H vectors, B vectors, these are engineering terms for magnetic as opposed to electrical stimulus, can have that same effect on a certain significant portion of the population. Now, in Eugene, Oregon, a number of people who had had absolutely no history of epilepsy were put on Dilantin, which was a drug that controlled seizures. Now, this was absolutely unheard of medically before these massive episodes of electromagnetic interference suddenly fell upon us out of the clear blue sky.
From Riga.
Well, yes. So, to answer your question, fortunately, everyone is not sensitive to this. We think about 35% as a minimum, maybe 50% as a maximum. The metaphor here would be that many years ago, I dated a lady who had rose fever. And when we went to a dinner party one time, she had to take her pyrobenzamine to keep from having an allergy attack at the dinner table. So she was a little bit sleepy. If 100% of the people on this planet had rose fever, we wouldn't have rose gardens. So the same thing is happening. We believe that the situation has begun to straighten itself out because people have adapted, just as insects adapted to insecticides and DDT. We're getting a little bit tougher in the face of all of this electromagnetic pollution. But for those people who are extremely sensitive to it, like our previous caller, something has to be done, and we'll be talking about this at great length.
Well, the question comes to my mind, is that an overt act that's happening on the part of the Soviets, or is it just part of something that they're doing over there, and we just happen to be getting the tail end of it?
I really don't know. This has come up for discussion in high places on many an occasion. Here, there are about three schools of thought. Number one, since the pulse repetition rate of the Soviet woodpecker is exactly 10 hertz, And since 10 hertz is a benign frequency, most of the problems in Eugene were caused by the heterodynes of this with power line frequencies, other rotating equipment. Should they drop that to just below 7 hertz, it would pick up a vast segment of the population and probably cause tremendous damage.
Well, the 7.85 are really right
down
there.
Well, 7.83 is the good guy. About 6.67 is the bad guy. It causes nausea, dissociation, mild lapse of consciousness, extreme anxiety, depression. Well, by the way, we'll be talking about brain tumors next weekend also.
We'll talk about those tonight, too.
Oh, all right. Well, that's for later. Shall we see who else is on the line out here?
All right. I think we have Adam on the line. No, Adam, I believe that's you.
Yeah.
Hi, Adam.
Hi, Bob. First of all, Bill, I want to tell you I agree with Sal 100%.
Well, thank you very much.
Me and my next-door neighbor both back you 100%.
Good.
And, Bob, you were talking about how these certain waves got people sick, you know, in Oregon. And I get these, quote-unquote, wonderful headaches. Would that be caused by the waves? Am I picking up these waves and they're causing...
Gee, I don't know. I don't want to practice medicine, particularly on the radio, but it's possible. And there are things you can do about that. I dare say you've had cytotoxic testing and whatever else. I'd have to know a lot more about that, but yes, it is possible. And no, I don't know what it is in your particular case.
Because aspirin doesn't seem to help.
Uh-huh. Have you done any testing at all, Adam?
I'm only 13 years old.
Oh, my.
No, I haven't done any testing at all.
There's so much speculation on headaches. Do you have migraine or cluster or tension headaches or et cetera, sinus headaches? I really don't think we should go into that.
Well, you know, that woodpecker sound you just played.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It kind of just, you know, pinged just right. It kind of hit me.
You got it.
Yeah, sort of weird.
Shall we play it again?
No, please.
Okay, you got it.
I was going to say, do you know if there is any specific type of people that were affected by these waves?
Well, apparently the more sensitive a person is, the more signal he gets, and also the more noise. And you just might be hypersensitive, like I was when I was your age.
Well, if it has any bearing, see, I'm a psychic and also a medium.
That has a lot of bearing.
It has a great deal of bearing.
Yeah.
And congratulations to you at 13 to understand that. And,
thank you.
And know what's going on. I really tip my hat to you. I hope you use that to your benefit and the benefit of mankind.
Oh, thank you very much. I plan to. So you can't, you know, you can't really say anything about my headaches.
I wouldn't dare.
Oh, okay.
How could we do that, Adam? Do you want to talk to somebody?
Well, you know, I just thought it might be a point.
What are some pointers he can look for here, perhaps, Bob?
Periodic? Do they tend to cluster around 4 in the morning, or is it in the afternoon, or are you in bright light, or are you inside, or have you just eaten dinner and had milk with your diet, which causes a lot of vasoconstriction? You know, there's so many variables here.
Well, I happen to have one right now.
Okay.
That's because you're listening to the show.
It's usually, though, during the day, sometime in the morning, about 8 o'clock or so.
That's a pretty consistent common denominator, an 8 o'clock attack, as it were.
Yeah, while I'm walking to school.
Maybe you don't want to go to school.
Well, it's usually then, and it's usually kind of like I wake up in the middle of the night, and sometimes I can't sleep. But
the middle of the night, is that midnight, or is that 3?
Well, yeah, 3 or...
3 o'clock is an unusual time for... A lot of people get up at 3 o'clock, and they're awakened for a lot of reasons. There's a lot of reasons for that.
This was one of the problems that was almost pandemic at the onset of the woodpecker. People would wake up around 3 or 3.30 in the morning, could not get back to sleep, but as soon as the sun came up, they could sleep till noon with absolutely no problem. Okay, now that could be electromagnetic perturbance there.
Because, I'd wake up with these marvelous headaches, and I just, you know, I'd take aspirin, and I'd just kind of wait for it to work, and it wouldn't work. I'd still have these headaches, and I'd end up staying up reading a book or something.
You have to learn how to get yourself into the alpha state. That'll help you solve that problem. Do you know how to do that?
No, not particularly. I've read... I don't know if you know of it. You probably do, but I've read Suspects.
Oh, yes. Anne Roberts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I read that whole book.
Tell me what I want you to do, Adam. Next week, I'll be here Monday through Wednesday. I get here about 9 o'clock, and you can just call the station, and it'll get you through to me.
9 in the morning or 9 at night?
9 to about 4 or 4:30 in the afternoon, depending on whatever's going on around here.
I see.
And I'd like to talk to you a little bit, and I'll give you a few exercises that'll let you get yourself into the alpha state.
Okay.
And then there are some other things you can do if that doesn't work.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
All right, Adam.
Bye-bye.
And best of luck on those headaches. You know, those things can be very, very terrible.
Oh, tell me about it.
That 3 o'clock waking. There are a lot of reasons for that may not be necessarily electromagnetic. It's kind of a...
I know.
A mystic time.
That opens a whole Pandora's box.
Well, we were into that a little bit last week, and certainly we get into that a lot. And we're going to get back into... what Mr. Dr. Robert Beck has for you in just a moment. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Dr. Robert Beck. We're talking about ELF. We'll talk about free energy. We'll talk about whatever happens to be on your mind. What about free energy, Robert?
Well, I think it's right around the corner. I've felt that for a number of years now, but the things I'm seeing today are a lot more promising than the ones 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Well, we just happen to have... a young man who has really got his feet wet into free energy on the line.
Hello, John.
John Bedini is with us. John, hello.
Hello, Tom, and hello, Bob. How are you?
Hi there, buddy.
How are you both?
How's your free energy device working?
Well, I sit down here in a cold garage because it's the most silent place in the world. But let me just bring some good tidings, as I may say, to the people out there in the radio audience. That we are basically on the verge right now of producing solid-state units in small form, which can do anywhere between 500 and 2,000 watts.
Oh, beautiful, John. Beautiful.
Let's put that into something I can understand,
okay,
John.
Yeah.
We've got 2,000 watts. Is it, you say 2,000 watts?
Yeah, anywhere between 500 and 2,000 watts without any depletion on one battery.
What? Okay. How many watts do I use in my house? You've been over there.
I think, Bill, you're up around 8 to 10 kilowatts.
Work harder, John.
Your device is not going to help, John.
Of course. No, it's a matter of the size of the unit. Is very important. I also want to make a very strict point out there to the people who want to deal with free energy that this type of energy, number one, is negative type. I think during the Colorado conference, the Colorado Springs, unfortunately, Bob, I didn't see you there, but I did hold a little box in front of maybe 500 engineers.
I heard about it from Ken.
Uh-huh. And I called a very, very good engineer out of the audience who works with the aerospace industry. I think you know who that is.
Sure, I do.
And he did a report. Now, if it wouldn't have been for a clip lead burning off his circuitry, his batteries were already past 20 hours driving 115-volt light bulbs and running motors and running quartz beam lights, which probably...
Which is a hard thing to do.
Yes. Okay, but...
is that paper, John, by the way, I've got a copy of it.
Yes.
It's fascinating reading it. Is it available any place?
Yes, that is under a different name. It will be available very shortly through the Tesla Book Company. I do not have the name, but the original name of that paper was A Visit to John Bedini.
Yeah,
okay.
I've got it.
Are you topping your original effort there? That was pretty fantastic.
We have, Bob, we have taken that effort. I think Bill very nicely said at the beginning of the program that there were people involved who came out and saw a new type of generator and who saw that something like 40 watts was being put in and something like 82 was being delivered.
Right, I think you told me about this.
Yes. of course, it's been very painstaking. I must say to the people out there, and to you too, Bob and Bill, that it's been very painstaking in the effort to make this available. Okay?
Well, you've done a beautiful job.
To the people, and I just want everybody to know out there that, you know, the cooperation on my part will be 100% towards this to them all.
Well, you certainly made a beautiful impression on the Atlanta conference, and we got nothing but good news about you from Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
So keep it up.
Well, you too, Bob. I also did want to bring up one point for this, for the audience out there, that Dr. Beck here has made great contribution in understanding exactly where this free energy may occur. Okay? We are dealing with something here that is very peculiar. It's a very cold energy. It will suck your body heat out. It will... we have demonstrated putting 500 to 600 watts on a transformer with this type of energy through special inverter-type circuits, which are solid-state, and the resistors get very cold instead of very hot.
Good grief, we're almost into the scalar domain.
Oh, yes. The one claim that I made, I will be talking more about that on the program next week, is that there is no plus and there is no minus in this dimension. We are talking about a battery, which there have been several patents on, that they do alternate, even though they show you a positive and negative potential.
Well, I'm certainly going to be listening next week.
Well, I only do this because I see the vast need for this energy to be opened up to the world, and I just hope that it's used for good and not for bad.
You know, John, one of these days, when it's all over, one of the most incredible stories that can be told, and I wish I could tell it now, but I can't, is the enormous problem about a young man who comes along and can give the world free energy. The problems with the politicians,
oh, yeah,
the bureaucrats, the bankers,
the telephones, you name it.
And they...
and plus the sickness that goes along with it.
And the sickness that goes along with it. And here comes the IRS, and here comes this group and that group. Don't you dare upset the apple cart out there by giving the world free energy. Now, Nikola Tesla was not able to survive.
That's right.
When he decided to give the world free energy. He was destroyed by the banking interest.
I think so, but I think, too, Bill, that Nikola Tesla... to this day is alive, and that you're getting just a very little short message from him right at this point in time. I do have to make a very important statement.
Go ahead and make it.
Bob Beck is probably one of the most versed men as far as all the papers that I have ever went through in this particular field, as far as ELF goes, as far as what these waves can do to you in the microwatt levels. But also, you must remember, Bill, you have two magic boxes on your speakers. They do the same thing.
I have the Bedini speakers.
They are fantastic, aren't
they? Yes, he has those two little chips, Bob.
Oh, yes.
On his speakers, which actually do affect the biological system. And we've known this for years in amplifiers, that if you could create what you would call the hyperwave in the hi-fi industry, that it would affect the biological system. And this would cause people to feel good about the music that they were listening to.
You know, it's an amazing thing, if I can get on that. In fact, I was just doing it this afternoon,
mm-hmm,
playing some of the tapes I have. ABC did the did the entire Olympics in stereo sound. And I have the tapes of the raw ABC feed, and I love to play it in stereo sound. with the Bedini speakers.
Oh.
But I love to watch the reaction of my guests that are enjoying it. It's a big screen TV with this magnificent sound system that John put in, and it really sounds like you're down at the Cinerama Dome. It's on radio. Uh-huh. And when it's over, they get upset.
I love it.
Or whether we're playing Raiders from the Lost Ark or whatever it is, the same thing happens because something happens to you whenever you're enjoying this moment. And it's more than just the sound, and it's more than just the visuals that you're seeing.
Psychoacoustics and scalar waves and all that good stuff. Maybe we'd better talk about
that. You're just being penetrated there.
Oh, yeah. Bob, if I may make one comment, and then this is your program.
Yeah, your week is next week.
you're talking to our Dolek.
But I would like to explain to the audience out there just for a very short period here, and I don't mean to take much time. The speakers are not mine. The boxes are.
That's okay, right. Thank you.
Even though these speakers utilize the same new semiconductor that you will be very shortly... is going to hit the marketplace. We have made great breakthroughs in this. We can now, if I may just throw this in there, Bob, and Bill knows of this, and a few psychics who have been on the program also know of this. You can have explosions without any nuclear fallout whatsoever. With this
gotcha.
Type of energy.
It happens all the time.
We've had two such explosions. And we're not doing that anymore. But
by the way, John, why don't you be our guest next weekend at the little workshop on these influences in health and call down at 393-9405 and tell them you're going to be on board. We're going to be demonstrating some electronic equipment that will be kind of the new age survival kit and giving out a bunch of schematics, so come on down and join us.
Well, I'd be glad to, and if Bill had had me along, I'll go with him.
Oh, far out. That'll be from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. next Saturday, October the 13th.
So that's 10?
10 till 5 at the Marriott Airport Hotel. And anyone else who wants any information on this, call that number again, 393-9405, and we should have an interesting time.
Oh, yes. I cringe every time I think I have to get on a freeway.
John, you get to drive whenever we go together.
Yeah, I just cringe because it's hell to be behind a diesel Cadillac, you know? Trying to make it up the hill when it would have been so much simpler to have four storage batteries powering that car that never went dead.
I think there's a subliminal message in there somewhere.
Yes.
What we're talking about is a car with an electric motor that has all the energy you need that you never have to charge up.
That's right.
And
that's
around the corner.
And what you must state
to
out
a consternation
of all this,
of a lot.
Right, is this was built by Tesla. Dr. Tesla did have such a car. And he did have such a remote-controlled boat, but unfortunately...
He had the Pierce Arrow.
Oh, yes.
That he drove all over western New York.
80 miles an hour.
And with no fuel whatsoever. He took out the Pierce Arrow motor, and he had an electric motor in it.
Far out.
Oh, yeah.
And that car is in Southern California.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
It is still here. Maybe we can display that one of these days.
But anyway, Bob, I just wanted to tell you that I've done, you know, a little bit of work with some of your things, and that you are absolutely 100% in telling the people the truth.
Well, thanks so much.
This, because it's a mandatory thing now that any of these little frequencies that happen to come along will disturb people not only physically, but can create a lot of mental illness.
Oh, by the way, Paul just passed on the word that Colonel Virgil Armstrong and his wife Sharon will be at the seminar next week, too, so it'll be sort of old home week.
Ah, Posty.
Nice.
Yes, indeed. That's one of my favorite people.
Hey, John, keep it up, and I'm back in town for a few weeks, and I want to come out and see you again.
Well, you're welcome anytime you want. You know that.
Right.
And we've all been working on the same thing. And I've just been real silent. I've had a few difficulties, but...
You silent?
Yeah. But, no, I just want to bring the encouraging word to to the people out there. It's just around the corner.
Well, I believe it.
All right, John, thank you so very, very much.
Here's a salute.
You're welcome.
You got the shot there.
Yeah.
John, you'll be with me from 9 to midnight next week. We'll talk about free energy. And,
okay.
Of course, there's a lot more with you that we can talk about. But I'm looking forward to that.
We had hoped to raise Tom Bearden tonight, but we can't get through to him. So, well, at any rate, he's here in spirit.
It is no surprise at all.
Okay.
All right, John, thank you very much. I'm Bill Jenkins with Dr. Bob Beck, and that was John Bedini, who will be our guest next week. Very important young man in the scheme of things. We'll see you in a moment. Bedini, who will be on with me a little bit later, and we have Randy on the line. Hello, Randy.
Hello.
Where are you calling from, Randy?
From Northern California.
Well, I thought so.
Yes. And
glad to have you aboard.
Yeah, right. I'd speak to Dr. Beck.
I'm Bob. Hi, Randy.
Bob. Hi, Bob. This actually happened to me. I would like, let's see, an explanation of what happened between a 100 light bulb that in this car. Okay. I have it written down. I'm sort of nervous.
I don't blame you. I'm nervous myself.
We're all nervous here, so...
Well, after you explain the free energy device, you know, it makes me, you know, a bit... You know.
Go ahead. Just be comfortable. Take your time.
You're with friends.
Okay.
Yeah. We don't care. We'll help you along if we can.
Okay. It's a 100 light bulb. This happened a couple years ago. And I was in this room with the 100 light bulb on, and this car was starting its engine... And then it was draining its batteries for 5 minutes. And and the car's batteries were just draining, and it shouldn't have started after it was draining for 5 minutes. But when the engine started, simultaneously the light bulb was draining very low dimmer, like about 20 watts instead of 100 watts. And it was a foggy, hazy day outside. This all happened in 7 minutes. So... Why did the light bulb dim less than the battery needed electricity? I guess the batteries needed electricity.
Are you wondering if there was some sort of connection between the battery drain of a car outside the house and the dimming of your light bulb? Is
Randy, that isn't as odd a question as you might think. I was an old UFO buff for many, many years, and... There had been occasions around Levelland, Texas, etc., when a UFO was sighted. The automobiles would sort of stall, and it was hard to start them, and lights would dim. And at that time, it was postulated that somehow these things, whatever they might be, were actually draining power from the electrical systems. And I guess Puharich believes that this is what caused that major blackout in New York City a few years back. So I don't say that any of this is impossible. Now, my friends in the scientific community might excommunicate me for this, but I'd say that maybe that was a very shrewd observation on your part.
Well, okay, but when the light bulb was on, when the car was draining the batteries.
Right.
And then when it started, when it zoomed up, and the battery, before it zoomed up, this moment of the time, the light dimmed to a dimmer, and then it went on.
Was the light on a silicon-controlled rectifier dimmer switch on the wall, or was it just on a plain old on-off switch?
No, it was plain old switch, right.
I just don't know. I would sure like to have seen that. Wonder if anyone else in the neighborhood reported dimming lights.
I only noticed it for myself.
Right.
It appeared that he stepped on the accelerator all the way down to the floor and then started it up. But the battery, I said to myself repeatedly, this car will not start because it drained all its batteries.
Sometimes when you rest a battery, it'll pick up enough surface charge to kick it over that one last time. But
it rested for a minute, and then the light drained.
I got you. I don't know, but, man, keep on looking. You know, it's these little clues from which we learn the most.
Have you noticed anything else in that area unusual in an electronic way? Where do you live?
Well, this was in Norwalk about a few years ago.
Yeah, that's not too far from here.
Yeah.
Anything can happen in Los Angeles, you know.
Right.
But it was sort of weird to me, and I just wanted to have an explanation on that.
Well, thanks for that, Randy. I don't really know what happened, but good grief, these are the things that I find the most fascinating.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Okay, Brandy?
Okay, I thank you. Wait a minute. Was it Dr. Tesla, Nick, Tesla?
Tesla,
right.
The lines, you know, 100 miles away. Yeah, electricity going from one place to another without
I don't believe it was quite that far. Some of his experiments in Colorado Springs went a few thousand feet.
Well, he had some, in fact, they did for a long time up around Niagara, or right outside of Buffalo.
Oh, he was transmitting AC over regular light lines. Yes, that's true.
He was transmitting without wires there for a while, and they finally shut that down.
Well, can that be the case?
Well, it's hard to say. It was a totally different principle.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Randy. These young guys with inquisitive minds, I love them. And, you know, that's what's going to make this world go around. Hello, Kent, you're on. What are you quizzing us about?
Hi, Bill. Well, I called up about the greenhouse effect subject that an earlier caller had brought up. And I've heard you talk about it, some time ago, and I've heard, read stories and reports of it, the theory, and I've heard, I think, Lowell Pondy, he's an advocate of that theory.
Lowell Pondy is a friend of mine.
Well, I tell you what, it's very interesting, because Lowell and I have gone around and round with that on this show, but it's very interesting to notice that the latest flight of the space shuttle has put up a $40 million satellite to explore the greenhouse effect.
Yes, I'm going to be looking forward to that, because I heard a...
So finally the government is understanding that there is a greenhouse effect, yes?
Well, that there's a possibility of it, and there's something happening as a result of the fossil fuel emissions. But I heard a news report, on a local news station 2 weeks ago that indicates that brought up evidence that there's been a fallacy in the basic hypothesis of the greenhouse effect. And a basic element of the story that's been left out by the proponents of that theory. I had my doubts about the theory when I first heard it and all along. And this report was of a major study here in California by unfortunately, I just heard it go by on the radio, and I was busy, and I don't recall the institution. I needed to go to the universities or something.
What did they say?
The group of scientists studied, figured that they could get information on what's been happening since the advent of the use of fossil fuels, which was toward the end of the last century, by studying the growth rings of the redwoods in Northern California. Because they're, hundreds and thousands or a couple of thousand or more years old, some of those trees, and by cutting them across the trunk and studying their growth pattern of the rings, they could see what effect it's had. Well, since 1895 or so, the rings grew much larger, which indicates that the plants grew.
Kent, can I get you to hang on? Do you want to hang on for about 5 minutes?
Sure.
We're going to take a break for news, and we'll be right back. I want you to finish that story. There's some interesting things about the growth rings of the trees in relation to the atmosphere, and we'll discuss those right after the news. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind. The outer limits of science. A lot of people don't even know that science exists out there. We live in an incredible technological age, and for some reason or another, whether that's the fault of media or whether that's some sort of conspiracy, I don't know. There seems to be an effort to keep you in the dark and keep your head buried in the sand. And I don't know about you, but I just don't like my head in the sand. Sand doesn't fit too well in my ears, and I don't want to stay there. And, Bob, thank you very much for the work that you've been doing and the books that you've written and the papers and the lectures. And although you were a hard man to get a hold of and get you on the air, I've been trying
for 2 years. Well, it wasn't so bad now that I'm down here. I'm actually enjoying it.
You know, it's a nice facility here.
Right. The coffee is great.
Hey, that's Foy out in the security lounge. Foy makes the best coffee in the world. Let's go back to our callers here. Before we do that, and I know we have Kent on the line, and Kent, we'll get back to you in just a second. You do something that we haven't touched on tonight, and I wish that you would spend a few minutes with us talking about brain tuning. This is kind of a controversial thing. Are you able to tune brains? Can I tune my brain?
Well, that was sort of a generic
term. I know there are a lot of people that like to tune my brain.
Actually, it was the title of an article that appeared in the January 1983 Omni magazine. that described this marvelous little black box that Dr. Meg Patterson had brought from England that would quite literally cure almost any type of addiction, from heroin, morphine, cocaine, all the way to some tobacco smokers, all alcoholics, Valium, Librium. And I read the article and thought, oh my goodness. But I was asked by a friend in Washington to stop in and visit the lady and see if there was anything that the chap could do in Washington to help her through FDA approval.
Forget that.
We got very fascinated with it, and I spent several months in the biomed library at UCLA researching it, and I found that these little devices had been used in the Soviet Union for about 30 years. They were in use all over Europe for addiction control, stress control, anxiety, depression, insomnia, addiction. Well, we said that. And so we had a number of these smuggled in. They sort of fell under the acupuncture laws, and you had to be a medical doctor.
You mean your people went to the Soviet Union and smuggled in some of their technology to the United States?
We sure did. We also bought these in Finland, Denmark, France, Germany, the Orient, England.
It's nice to know that works the other way every now and then.
Right. Yeah. So we took these things apart, and we found that, sure enough, there were certain frequencies, spectra, that if applied to certain acupuncture points on the head, stimulated the production of neurotransmitters. The one that probably has gotten the greatest press is the beta endorphin, the body's natural painkiller. The devices worked. It seemed like the people who were trying it had totally stalled out. After about 3 years, they had not produced one single prototype. So I built a few of these. Fortunately, I have a spectrum analyzer on my Apple computer. We were able to synthesize the precise frequencies that cause these very rapid reversals of neurotransmitter problems. And we've been making these things now for about a year and just getting astonishing results with them. And we'll talk about these again this next weekend. This isn't a medicine show, but if you want to get into far more detail on these things, call Paul's number at 393-9405, and we're doing a weekend on all of this and passing out schematics of a number of these devices so people can help themselves.
Well, I think it's amazing. You know, you mentioned that the box that you have there stimulates the creation of endorphins, which is the natural painkiller.
Right.
Dr. Patrick Flanagan's Neurophone is a mighty stimulator of endorphins. Are you familiar with the Neurophone?
Yes, I am. I have several of these that people have dropped off at my place, and let's not talk about that right now.
All I know, I remember I broke my foot, and I just happened to have the Neurophone over there, and I was messing with it because I wasn't going to go anywhere.
Okay.
To find out what that thing was doing. I never had another pain once with that, and one of the byproducts of it is endorphin stimulation. And I use it as a painkiller all the time. Don't ever have too many painful situations, but if I do, I go get it. So, yeah, we're using some circuitry here that is stimulating something.
Right. There are specific frequencies that stimulate, the broad spectrum of them are just the neurotransmitters that you think you need at that particular time. And a tremendous amount of work has been done on this. At the Biomed Library at UCLA, we found about 300 references in the open literature. And I was amazed that these were not available in every drugstore. But the answer soon became apparent. The traffic in addictive Valium and Librium alone is $13.6 billion.
Yeah,
traffic in alcohol, tobacco is up in the 20-30 billion.
The establishment does not like us talking about using a Hertzian wave to create endorphins, which stops pain.
No, because a 98-cent transistor radio battery will last for a couple of months and cure 100 people, and instead of going to the doctor and buying pills, which is where the profit is, we just shouldn't know about the clean way to do this without side effects.
I don't know about you, but I really don't like putting those kind of chemicals in my body if I can resist the urge.
We have some of these floating around a movie studio here where some of the people have been on cocaine for a number of years, and they're totally clean. And before the brain tuner, they had tried, almost every hospital farm around to detox, and they were right back on it within a week.
But the brain tuner does, you do have quite a history of...
It has about a 35-year history of total success, and we're putting together a bibliography on this, which is free if there are any doctors in the audience that doubt this.
Now, if somebody wanted to talk to you about the brain tumor, particularly how it works in coping with drug addiction or alcohol addiction or any of these addictions that we all could get into. You know, I get addicted to all different kinds of things every week, you know, something.
We have a problem here. The device is not approved by the FDA, nor possibly will it ever be.
Well, so no, it's preventative medicine, and of course the FDA won't
believe
okay preventative medicine.
That a consenting adult, an informed consenting adult, should have the constitutional right to experiment on himself. So we're selling it as an experimental device, and 100% money-back guarantee, and if it doesn't work, send it back. And we've only had two returned in the last year, and these were people that took them apart trying to make their own and sent us a box of parts back. Instead of the device, we still gave them their money back.
There you go.
But this is quite a story, and I think we'll touch on it next weekend.
All right. How do we reach you about finding out about those?
Paul has put together a seminar here that'll be Saturday, October the 13th from 10 to 5 p.m., 10 a.m., 5 p.m., and you can call 393-9405 for information. And what we're doing is putting out a tremendous amount of information and free circuit diagrams of how to build some of these detox-type devices. We won't be passing out diagrams of the brain tuner, but we definitely will be giving away diagrams of the magnetic pacers that counteract the ambient electromagnetic interference.